Thin towers of smoke rose from a few fire pits. The shacks were crude parodies of the cottages belonging to villages downriver, lashed up frames with walls and roofs made from panels of woven palm fronds. There was a single jetty that looked terribly unsafe, with three hollowed-out log canoes tied up to it. A small stream, trickling through the middle of the clearing into the river, was an open sewer. Goats were tied to stakes, foraging in the short grass. Emaciated chickens scratched around in the mud and sawdust. The inhabitants stood about listlessly and watched the Swithlin go past with numb, hooded eyes. Most of them were wearing shorts and boots, their skin a deep brown, whether from the sun or dirt it was hard to say. Even the apparently eternal chattering of the jungle creatures was hushed. "Welcome to the town of Schuster," Rosemary said with some irony. She was standing on the bridge, one eye permanently on the forward sweep mass detector, watching out for fault line and submerged snags. Group 7's counsel and Poel Manani were ranged around the bridge behind her, grateful to be in the shade. "This is it?" Rye Mulvey asked, aghast. "The county capital, yeah," Poel said. "They've been going for about a year now." "Don't worry," Rosemary said. "The land you've been allocated is another 12 kilometres upriver. You won't have to have much contact with them. No bad thing, too, if you ask me. I've seen communities like this before. They infect their neighbours. Better you have a fresh start." Rye Mulvey nodded briefly, not trusting himself to speak. The three river craft sailed on slowly, leaving behind the shanty town and its torpid inhabitants. The colonists, gathered on Swithlin's aft deck, watched them disappear as the boat rounded a bend in the river, silent and contemplative. Horst made the sign of the cross, muttering an invocation. Perhaps a requiem would be more appropriate, he thought. Jay Hilton turned to her mother. "Will we have to live like that, Mummy?" "No," she said firmly. "Never." 2 hours later, with the river down to 150-metre width, Rosemary watched the digits on the inertial guidance block flick round to match the coordinates the land allocation office had given her. Carl stood on the prow as the Swithland crept along at a walking pace, his keen eyes searching the impenetrable green barrier of vegetation along the southern bank. The jungle was steaming softly from the rain of an hour earlier, white tendrils wafting out of the treetops, then spiralling away into the burning Asia sky. Small, colourful birds darted about between the branches, shrieking brazenly. Carl suddenly jumped up and waved to his mother, pointing at the bank. Rosemary saw the tarnished silver pillar with its hexagonal sign on top. It was stuck in the soil 5 metres above the water. Vines with big purple flowers had already climbed halfway up it. She gave the horn a triumphant hoot. "End of the line!" she sang out. "This is Aberdale, last stop." "All right," Poel said, holding up his hands for silence. He was standing on a barrel to address the assembled colonists on the foredeck. "You've seen what can be done with a little bit of determination and hard work, and you've also seen how easy it is to fail. Which road you go down is entirely up to you. I'm here to help you for 18 months, which is the period your future will be settled in. That's the make-or-break time. Now tell me, are you going to make a go of it?" He received a throaty cheer and smiled round. "Fine. Our first job is going to be building a jetty so that Captain Lamborn and the other two riverboats can dock. That way we can unload your gear properly without getting it wet. Now, a jetty is an important part of any village on this river. It tells a visitor straight away what sort of community you want to carve out for yourselves. You'll notice our good captain wasn't too eager to stop at Schuster. Not surprising, is it? A good jetty is one that the boats are always going to stop at, even out here. It's a statement that you want to take part in what the planet has to offer. It says you want to trade and grow rich. It says that there are opportunities here for clever captains. It makes you a part of civilization. So I think it would be a good idea if we start off as we mean to go on, and build ourselves a solid, decent jetty that's going to last out your grandchildren. That's what I think. Am I right?" The chorus of yes was deafening. He clapped his hands together and hopped down off the barrel. "Quinn, He beckoned to the lad who was in the group of quiet ivets standing in the shade of the superstructure. Quinn trotted forward.
"Yes, sir?"
The respectful tone didn't fool Pole for a second.
"The captain is holding station against the current for now, but it's costing her power. So we have to secure the Swithland if we want her to stay for any length of time. I want you to ferry a cable out to the shore and tie it onto a tree large enough to take the strain. Think you can manage that?"
Quinn looked from Pole to the mass of dark green vegetation on the bank, then back to Pole.
"How do I get over there?"
"Swim, boy. And don't try telling me you can't. It's only 35 meters.
Carl came over, uncoiling a rope.
"Once you've secured it, we'll haul the Swithland into the shallows and rig a proper mooring," the boy said. "Everyone else can wade ashore from there."
"Great," Quinn said sourly. He took his shoes off, then started to shrug out of his jumpsuit. Vorix nosed around the two shoes, sniffing eagerly.
Quinn left his shorts on and sat on the decking to put his shoes back on.
"Can Vorix come with me, please?" he asked.
The dog looked round, long tongue hanging out of the side of its big jaw.
"What the hell do you want him with you for?"
Pole asked. Quinn gestured to the jungle with its barrage of animal sounds.
"To take care of any wild sace."
"Get in the water, Quinn, and stop whinging. There aren't any wild sace around here."
Pole watched as the lad eased himself over the side of the deck and into the river. Jackson Gale lay flat on the deck and handed the rope down. Quinn started swimming for the shore with a powerful side-stroke, dragging the rope behind him.
"The croak lines ate all the safes,"
Pole yelled after him, then, laughing heartily, went aft to get the jetty-building team organized.